Welcome to our Medford meeting of the House Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules. I am the chair of the committee, Diane Rosenbaum, State Representative Diane Rosenbaum, and also Speaker Pro Tem. We are very, very pleased to be here in Jackson County and in Medford tonight. And I am going to begin by letting our committee members introduce themselves, and then we're also going to have some words of welcome from our local elected officials. So would you like to start?
I would be glad to. My name is Arnie Roblin. I'm the state representative from the Coos Bay Area, District 9. Really happy to be here tonight. I think back to early days, and one of my first distance runs was here in Medford, when it used to be a little longer run that went out into the hills and back in the when I was a youngster. So it's been a long time since those days, but I have some great memories here of the Pear Blossom Run and so on. So it's great.
And I'm State Representative Vicki Berger. I represent part of the Salem area. This is my third term in the House. I'm very happy to be here. In fact, my office is a couple doors away from Sal Esquivel's, and to hear him talk, this is paradise, and we always wonder how he can pull himself away from here and come up to Salem. And after having coming down, I have to agree it's pretty nice here, and we're very happy to be here.
I'm Peter Buckley. I represent a district that starts about a mile over there and goes that way. That takes in Jacksonville, Phoenix, Talent, and Ashland, and I'm very pleased to be on my home turf.
I'm Representative Sal Esquivel, District 6, Medford. I'm home. I'm glad to be home, glad to see you. Good to see some faces from home, and it's nice to be here. And you're right, this is paradise.
Hi, I'm State Representative Kim Thatcher. I represent Kaiser, St. Paul, and Newburgh, and thank you, Medford, for hosting us.
Great. And I also want to introduce our very capable staff who have made the arrangements and gotten us all set up. Our committee administrator, Jim Stembridge, is seated to my left, as well as our committee assistant, Shauna Parker. And then we are joined tonight by Brian Ager, who is also helping us out. And there are a couple of local elected officials in the audience, and we're very pleased to have them here, too. So I would like to recognize Kathy Beckett, who is the Jackson County Clerk. Thanks very much for being here. As well as the Vice President of the Medford City Council, Jim Kuntz. Jim, thank you very much for being here. We're very pleased to have you. And so we will shortly get to the bills on our schedule, but I thought right now we could hear from both Representatives Buckley and Representatives Esquivel, since we are in your neighborhood.
Oh, wonderful. Should I let my older colleague go first here?
Dangerous.
Yes, but I'm always the good-looking one.
That's true. Let's welcome. Thank you all for making the trip here. We're delighted to have you here. It's great to see our county clerk, Kathy. I was mentioning to Sal that he is talking about how the fact that you show up at all the events, you know, both in his campaign events, my campaign events, whatever, and I made the remark that Kathy's proud of all of us and usually only mad at one of us at a time. So it's great to see you here. It's wonderful. I think we both can easily say that we're proud to represent Jackson County in the legislature. We have wonderful colleagues in the Southern Oregon delegation. We have wonderful colleagues on this committee as well. This is just to kind of let you know a little bit of background. This is kind of the cool committee, because we got people who are very skilled and very intelligent, and we get to delve into a wide variety of matters with elections and ethics and rules. It really spans a variety of topics, and at the end of session, we're one of the last committees standing too. So then you get everything that's coming down the pipe comes to this committee. So it's wonderful to have a chair who is experienced and keeps us more or less in line, and to know that we have a really ambitious work schedule and very interesting and exciting work to do. So it's great to be here. And Representative Esquivel, I'll toss it over to you.
Thank you, Representative Buckley. Probably each and every one of you see Peter and I, we do a show on a monthly basis, and now we're doing it on a twice a month basis. We're doing it the second and fourth Tuesday, I believe, of every month, and it is a live show from the Capitol, and it's on Channel 9 of your closed circuit and on your cable, so make sure you, and it is a live call-in, so you can get on us if you want to, or tell us that we're doing okay. We have a wide variety of different things we discuss, anywhere from like this, what we're talking about, elections, to ethics, to we even have health care. We have everything under the sun we talk about in that show. I'm very, very pleased that this Chair Rosenbaum elected to come to Medford. I'm very pleased that she allowed us to come down here during session, because it gives us an opportunity to put our best foot forward and show them hospitality, Southern Oregon style. And Peter briefly mentioned about your Southern Oregon delegation, and I must add that it's probably the best delegation I've seen work together. We don't work together as Republicans and Democrats. We work together as Oregonians and Southern Oregonians. And we've been very fruitful with that approach. But more importantly, we have a great respect for one another and each other's ideas and each other's philosophies. And I think that's very healthy.
Well, so, most of each other's ideas.
Yeah, well, except for Peter's, you know. No.
Great. Well,
but thank you very much, Chair.
Yes. Well, it's great to be here. We really are pleased to be here. And this is the 74th session of the Oregon Legislature, which just began January 8th. So we haven't even been in session 2 months. But as you've probably been hearing or reading, we have been very busy passing legislation, hearing lots of important bills, some of which we're about to hear tonight. But it really was important to us to make sure that we didn't just stay in Salem, that we got around the state, and so it was especially my interest in being in this part of the state and being able to come and hear from you all in your own communities where you live. And so I'm going to say just a couple of general things about the way we do business here. We'll be hearing two bills tonight, and we are not, you know, going to really stand on ceremony. We want to hear from you, and we want to hear your thoughts, but we do have copies of the bills out on the podium, so if you didn't already pick those up, they're still available right in front of the dais here, as well as there's this fluorescent green sheet about some of the protocol for testifying in front of legislative committees. And obviously, we really want to hear what you have to say, so we're not going to worry too much about the exact protocol, but it does give you some idea of how to testify in front of a committee. So at this point, I will open a public hearing on House Bill 2647 and ask our committee administrator, Mr. Stembridge, to tell us about this bill.
Yes, Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, House Bill 2647 authorizes the creation of historic districts established in the same manner as other local service districts to acquire, reconstruct, operate, and maintain historic sites and structures, and to establish and maintain programs for historical societies within the district. HB 2647 prescribes that historic districts be governed by a board of 5 members. It prescribes that board members be elected by electors of the district. It authorizes the board to assess, levy, and collect taxes not to exceed 1/4 of 1% of real market value. It authorizes the historic districts to establish sinking funds for the acquisition of historic real property and for the restoration of historic buildings or facilities.
Thank you. And I would note that both Representatives Buckley and Representative Esquivel are sponsors of this legislation. I know it has special significance for the area that we're in. We have a sign-up sheet of witnesses, and we will first hear from George Krause. George, would you like to join us up here at the table?
Madam Chair, if I can mention
this
bill does come from the entire Southern Oregon delegation, and as part of it, you'll see the word historic district throughout, but we've already been under discussion to actually change it to heritage district, so those two words might be used interchangeably tonight.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Good evening. Thanks for joining us.
Good evening, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I would like to second our thanks that you've come to Jackson County to hear what we have to say. It beats driving to Salem as often as I know many of us do. My name is George Kramer. I live at 386 North Laurel in Ashland. I am here as the chairman of the Oregon Heritage Commission. We are a nine-person, nine-citizen member board appointed by the governor with eight ex officios representing various groups and agencies within state government that concern themselves with heritage and historic preservation issues. One of our main constituencies are the historical societies scattered throughout the entire state of Oregon. We run two funding granting programs, Oregon Heritage Grants and Oregon Museums Grants, that are funded through the legislature, thank you, that we disperse to those groups. And we are, unfortunately, the place that they go when they have financial issues. The board, the commission met. We, at our regular scheduled quarterly meeting in February, we were thankfully able to hear from representatives of historical societies, including the Southern Oregon Historical Society, the Klamath County Historical Society, the Lane County Historical Society, members from the Oregon Museums Association, and the Historical Society in Columbia County. History, heritage is an important economic development tool in Oregon, in addition to just being who we are as Oregonians. Much of our history is scattered throughout repositories all over the state. We have a lot in the Oregon Historical Society, of course, a lot in Douglas County, a lot in the larger museums, but in the smaller museums in Haines and Lafayette and Newburgh and the Dalles and every town you go into, they are concerned about their heritage and they are doing everything they can in tough times to save it. We have a huge impact. Heritage has a huge impact on economics through heritage tourism. Heritage tourists come to Oregon, they stay longer, and they spend more, according to the Oregon Tourism Commission, than other kinds of tourists. We have, and the estimate of that is that they spend 1.4 nights more than other kinds of tourists, and that they spend $210 more per trip. And we have a representative from the Oregon Tourism Commission on the Heritage Commission, and heritage tourism is an important part of Oregon's tourism economy. Local historical societies provide services to education districts and to school districts to help young Oregonians learn about their heritage. They go on bus tours to the museums, they go to cemeteries with docents, and they publish curriculum and anything they can do to help young people learn about what it means to be an Oregonian. And the timing of this particular bill is appropriate in that we are coming up on our 150th anniversary of statehood in 2009, as most of you know. Many of the historical societies that would benefit from a bill like this were actually founded in 1957-58 in expectation of Oregon's centennial, and will be celebrating their 50th anniversary in 2009 if they still have their doors open. In 2003, of all of these historical societies across the state, they received an average of just 12% of their funding statewide came from various government entities, most of it through historical society levies in just a few counties. We voted, our commission voted unanimously at a special meeting this Monday to encourage you to support this legislation to create this local opportunity for historical societies and communities that recognize the value of their heritage and are willing to support it. We think having that local option is an incredible opportunity for local historical societies to make their case to the public about why they deserve support. Not every county, not every city will support that, but we would like to give our constituency the opportunity to ask for that support. Representative Buckley has mentioned the requested change in from historic to heritage district. The Oregon Heritage Commission is part of the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department, and we support and concur with that change. Historic districts are a recognized entity where all the old houses are. And to avoid any sorts of confusion, we think a heritage district is a much more appropriate term. We would encourage you to allow this bill to go forward, and we hope that it will become law. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Are there any questions for this witness? Vice Chair Berger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Kramer, I'm sort of new to this heritage history district. You said there already are historic districts.
Actually, Jackson County in 1948 created a historical levy that was funded at the same rate that this bill is proposing as a maximum. And that is how Jackson County was able to develop the Southern Oregon Historical Society and ultimately all of the satellite museums that benefit from that fund. Because of changes in Oregon tax law, ballot measures 50 and 47, those districts were absorbed into the general fund and no longer served that purpose.
So, Madam Chair, so this would reestablish that authority, if you would, this bill?
It would reestablish the opportunity for local voters to create such a district.
Okay, I understand the distinction. And you are, if I could, Madam Chair, one more follow-up. You are suggesting that you would prefer the change to Heritage District if this goes forward.
Thank you.
Vice Chair Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Kramer, thank you for your testimony. Thank you for your service on behalf of Oregon's Heritage. Just to follow up a little bit on my colleague's questions, Representative Berger's questions, Ashland has a historic district, the Historic Railroad District, which is an area of town that is designated as having special qualities to it and therefore special needs to preserve it. What we're talking about is something that's a little bit different. We're talking about for the Historical Society, basically, and its programs to be able to be funded by a special district. Do I have that correct?
That is correct.
Very good. And just to emphasize, I'm hoping I'm beating a dead horse here, but this would provide the option for other counties, other districts to do the same thing, but only if they chose to, correct?
Yes, correct. My understanding is that there is a list of the sorts of special taxing districts that can be created under Oregon state law. This adds to that list heritage districts, and where a county entity chose to put forward such a proposal and the voters agreed with it, then that district would be created subject to the rules outlined in the bill.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Roblin.
Yes, thank you. And you mentioned ballot measure 50 and 47, which caused a lot of difficulties in a lot of different ways. But would this then cause compression with other entities that already exist if they're already using the $10 per thousand limit? Do you know?
I believe that this is a levy that would be subject to the $10 per thousand limit, yes.
Representative Thatcher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just out of curiosity, you're mentioning that heritage tourists stay longer and spend more, and I'm just wondering, is there any data on where these people come from? Are they from in the state or outside the state?
I'm sure that data exists.
Yes. That's okay.
Most of that data comes from the Oregon Tourism Department, or Travel Oregon, and I'm certain that if you are interested, we can get that to you.
I can find out. Okay. I just thought it might be interesting to know. Thanks.
Yeah. Other questions? I had a couple of questions for you, George. You mentioned that you had heard from about half a dozen of the historical societies or heritage districts. How many are there in the state now that would
fully
potentially?
Statewide?
Yes.
I believe that if you added up all of the local historical societies, all of the county historical societies, all of the special interests, the Oregon Maritime Museum, there are probably over 100. My expectation and our hope is that in Jackson County, for example, where there is the Southern Oregon Historical Society and then many individual smaller local societies, Talent, Butte Falls, Prospect, Rogue River, that they would, much like the original Jackson County Historical Levy, would work together and share a single fund. We have concerns, quite frankly, Madam Chair, about very small communities forming very small heritage districts that may not be sufficiently there might not be sufficient tax assessed base for them to actually do anything. We would rather see this happen at a county or large city level.
And is the Oregon Historical Society connected with this?
No.
Because I know that they, too, have suffered pretty major financial setbacks.
They have suffered financial setbacks. They used to receive an appropriation directly from the legislature, which was reduced and then zeroed out. My understanding is that there is actually going to be a bill before you in the governor's budget that would reauthorize funding for them. Were the Oregon Historical Society, I don't know that they would be an applicable entity for a heritage district like this. It would have to be statewide, I suppose.
Okay. Other questions? Representative Roblin.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. You pose a dilemma from my mind, and I just have to think about this. So say you're in Jackson County and you decide that they want to form a Jackson County Heritage District, and then Ashland decides they want one for just a part, and Medford decides they want one, just a heritage one. Could you have multiple ones with overlapping jurisdiction? Each imposing the...
I would assume the answer would be they're in the current bill, there is no limitation on size or assessed value in which to create a district. There is talk about allowing districts to be regional in nature and multiple jurisdictions. My expectation is that some of those would pass and some of them wouldn't. But I suppose technically if Jacksonville wanted to tax itself as a city-based heritage district and then Jackson County as a whole came back later and did the same thing, that residents in Jacksonville would pay two levies.
All right. I don't see any other questions for you, so thank you very much for
your
testimony. Next we'll hear from Scott Clay. Welcome to the committee.
Well, thank you, and welcome to the historically designated Jackson County Courthouse, built in 1932. While serving on the board of the Southern Oregon Historical Society, we commissioned the nomination of this building to the register prior to the formation of the Medford District.
Sorry to interrupt you, but could you please identify yourself?
Yes, I'm Scott Clay, and I live at 407 Park Avenue here in Medford. I am the city planner and historic preservation officer for the city of Jacksonville. And Jacksonville is very supportive of the Heritage District that is itemized in this particular piece of legislation. Mayor Lewis apologizes for not being able to attend this evening. He is ill, but is again sending his support as well as the rest of the city. The City of Jacksonville, of course, contains quite a few historic resources. I don't know that we would actually go for a separate district. We like to be sort of team players when it comes to heritage management and would probably be supportive of a more regional approach to that. Numerous issues are dealt within the City of Jacksonville. Currently, as a National Historic Landmark listed district, we are looking at land use issues on the adjacency to the city limits. Many of you probably have heard about this. We are taking on the case of management and preservation of the historic resources very seriously. We have commissioned a laser imaging project of the brick commercial and the engaged wood frame commercial buildings in the core central area. This is a valuable tool for not only the preservation and architectural conservation, but seismic retrofitting of the facilities as well. Excuse me. My involvement with historic preservation, historic resources predates my time with the City of Jacksonville. Actually, I used to be in the county planning offices just down the hallway here for 21 years. The first thing that I did when hired by the county was to conduct a countywide survey of historical resources under the Goal 5 guidelines, statewide guidelines. And that process, we identified in the rural unincorporated areas of the county close to 640 properties, historic resources. It's sad to look now and see, you know, just after 30 years, how many of them have been lost. At that point in time, we had 4 historic covered bridges. We're now down to only one on its original site that has not undergone significant renovation. So again, the city of Jacksonville is very supportive of the legislation that you're considering at this time, and if you have any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Thank you very much for being here. And next we'll hear from John Enders. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson and members of the committee. Thank you for coming. My name is John Enders. I live at 367 Bridge Street in Ashland. I'm the executive director of the Southern Oregon Historical Society. First, I'd like to thank Representative Esquivel and Representative Buckley for joining the other members of the Southern Oregon delegation in co-sponsoring this important piece of legislation. We very much appreciate it, and we very much appreciate the field hearing opportunity to address it here on our home turf. I drive to Salem too often myself. This piece of legislation allows jurisdictions, counties, cities, or other entities to seek to go to their own voters and ask them to support heritage. The voters of Jackson County have a long history of doing that. As George Kramer mentioned earlier, in 1948, we passed a history levy. It was on the books for many years until the property tax limitation measures effectively did away with the particular levy. And it's our intention to use this legislation to seek a permanent and stable source of funding for heritage and historic preservation in Jackson County on a countywide basis, not on a jurisdiction-by-jurisdiction basis. We are a 1,500-member-strong historical society. We've been in existence for 60 years. We have almost 100,000 three-dimensional artifacts in our collection and 1,000,000 two-dimensional artifacts, including photographs, documents, pioneer diaries, Oregon Trail memorabilia, Peter Britt's photographs, and glass plate negatives. We have a treasure in our permanent collection. We also manage historic structures in Jacksonville and a historic farm just outside of Jacksonville. Other than the Oregon Historical Society, we are Oregon's great historical society, and because of the 1948 levy, that's allowed us to not only become an institution to be proud of, but also to serve as an umbrella organization over another group of smaller historical associations, a 15-member Jackson County History Museums Association, everything from the Weimar Bridge Association to the Genealogical Society in Phoenix to the Eagle Point Historical Society to the Southern Oregon Chapter of the National Railway Historic Association. We have a 15-member strong Jackson County History Museums Association, and this is a legislation that we as a coalition support. So we intend to all work together on a countywide basis to approach the voters of Jackson County to support a stable level of permanent funding for heritage and historic preservation. We also support the change in terms from historic district to heritage district, and we've also submitted in writing to the committee an additional piece of language in Section 20, which would specify that not only do we care for buildings, but we also care for data and collections and artifacts. We've added a brief piece of text to that just to broaden the definition essentially of what historical societies and museums do in the modern age, because much of what we preserve is data and digitized data as well and artifacts and collections, not just historic structures. We are grateful for the committee's hearing. We hope you will see this as an opportunity for different districts, both in this county and around the state, for supporters of Heritage to approach the voters and say, okay, well, how much do you support Heritage? Are you willing to support Heritage at a nominal level in terms of a tax levy? And really, it's all about local option, and we feel pretty strongly about that. I think that's why the Southern Oregon delegation across the board was able to support this. This puts it in the hands of local voters, and we're looking forward to making our best case in the future. So I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you again for holding your hearing in Medford. It's my hometown, by the way.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Representative Esquivel.
As you know, John, it is mine as well.
Right.
In fact, my family is in your particular society because they settled here in the 1880s, and they have quite a large track record on them. You do not, though, control the we're getting a little confused here with this terminology, because a lot of people think that what we're talking about is a historic district for housing.
Right.
You don't really control that, do you? Isn't that done by this particular municipality?
We don't have anything to do with the designation of private properties as either being on the national list of historic properties or municipal heritage or historic districts. No, we're a private nonprofit organization.
I just wanted, Madam Chair, follow up. I just wanted to clarify that, because we seem to be getting, I've been getting quite a few calls of people talking about historic districts within residential areas, and I just wanted to clarify that is not the case here.
Which explains even further why we think that terminology change would be helpful, so that it isn't confused with historic districts in downtown areas, or in Jacksonville's case, the National Historic Landmark District, which is a national designation. Yeah. And we love the word heritage anyway. It's more inclusive.
Vice Chair Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I believe Mr. Enders mentioned text that was sent in, I believe it was sent to my office. So if you'll be patient, I'll go get it and be back. Mr. Enders,
I get it.
Go get it.
I get it.
Were we not to pass this piece of legislation, do you have, what other options does the Historical Society of Jackson County have to fund its operations into the future?
Since for about the last 7 years, we've been a part of the Jackson County budgeting process. And I'm sure you're all aware of the situation that Jackson County is in, like many of the other ONC counties in Oregon. We anticipate that Jackson County will terminate all funding for historical purposes as of July 1st. That's what we're budgeting on. We've known that for several years. We've been managing a society in an entirely different way in the last 3 or 4 years. We've raised our level of earned and contributed income to what this year is about 50% of our budget. So essentially, we will see major cutbacks and major reductions in services as of July 1st. We are anticipating that, and we're putting them in place anyway, independent of this legislation, because obviously this would not provide any revenue for us, even if our levy proposal passes until 2009 sometime. But our priorities are the collections in our permanent collection artifacts and the historic buildings that we manage. We're keeping our museums open. We're keeping our research library open. We're downsizing to a point that is extremely painful, and it actually puts at risk all of our programs and some of our structures, but we think it's maintainable for a couple of years. We're also maximizing our private fundraising efforts. In fact, if anybody is here on March 15th, we have a fundraising event. We'd love to have you join us.
Thank you.
Further questions? Yes, Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess the question is that as you're doing that and saving money, as I was looking over some stuff earlier today, recognizing you'll be a special district, you do have to pay for the election.
Right.
And if it's going to be the whole county, that will be fairly expensive.
$39,000.
Okay. That's good to know. I think that sometimes people don't understand that there are a whole lot of those things.
We understand that. And we are in a fortunate position of having acquired the old JCPenney building in downtown Medford. That has been our headquarters for a number of years. We've recently moved out of that building back to Jacksonville. It's leased out to Lithia Motors right now. It's for sale. They have a purchase option on the building. We also have a certain amount of money already in our permanent endowment, and some of that will be dedicated to this election.
Thank you. Vice Chair Berger.
Thank you. Mr. Anders, it's really nice to hear you kind of describe the scope of all the historic interests around Southern Oregon. And I just wanted to comment on your, I would encourage you to add the language that you mentioned here, because I think we heard testimony in an earlier bill about the need, the desperate need for archiving before things disappear. And I presume, Madam Chair, that there someone will offer up an amendment with some language that will include that. And I think you're right, Section 20, in rereading it. It talks about structures, historic sites and structures and programs, but it doesn't talk about artifacts or archiving of documents.
Which is one of the great challenges, Representative Berger, that we have in the museum area. It is incredibly expensive and very labor-intensive to digitize hard copies of stuff, and the Smithsonian itself spends $1 million a day doing it, you know.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And next we'll hear from James Kuntz.
Thank you, members of the commission. Welcome to Medford. We're happy to have you down here doing the field testimony. I'm James Kuntz. I live at 522 Park Avenue, Medford, about two blocks that way. And I'm really happy you're holding this hearing here, and I'd like you to add my support to this bill. This bill's going to stabilize a lot of things for our area that we need help in. We need to get the historical societies on a firm footing. We need to preserve our history. That's a tourist asset for us. When people come to visit other things in Southern Oregon, history is always something they get to do in addition to, or they come here for history and get to do other things in addition to history. So it's very important. Our city of Medford has a historic commission, a historic and landmarks commission, and we have a historic cemetery commission that takes care of the history in the city of Medford. We're now wrestling with Carnegie Library, how we're going to deal with that structure. Now that's been vacant, and the mayor's appointed a special select committee to review that, and they've had several meetings. They've got a lot of work done and are hoping to get that resolved middle part of this year. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them for you.
Are there any questions? Representative Esquivel.
Good to see you, Jim.
Thank you.
I do want to say, just to let you know, give you a heads up, that we're due to finish here between 7:30. We're going to go over and introduce ourselves to the City Council in its meeting, so maybe you can make that motion for us when we get there. So I just give them a heads up.
All right.
Thanks for your support on this bill, because I think it's very important to the region.
I agree. Thank you very much, and I'll see you across the street in a bit.
Great. Thanks very much for your testimony. And that completes our sign-up sheet. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on House Bill 2647?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Mr. Stembridge.
I have a comment that I could make. On the first page of the bill, you will see that the legislature over the years has created these historic districts for various purposes, including economic improvement, water supply, mass transit, library. On the second page, it shows road district, geothermal heating, drainage, diking, soil and water conservation districts, weed control, a wide variety of purposes. If you would like for the committee, I could go back and try to reconstruct this historically and find out what sessions each of these was added on. It's one of the things that we see from time to time during sessions is other ideas for these special districts.
Would that be of interest to committee members?
Yeah.
Yes, I think that would be great to see if you could put that together for us. Okay, thank you. Well, that completes our testimony. I think I speak for the committee when I say that House Bill 2647 is an important bill. Tonight we're just here in a public hearing, but we will certainly be entertaining this bill at a future date in a work session. I know we will have amendments that are forthcoming that will address some of the issues that have been raised tonight, and I think by the fact that we came here, heard the bill here, you can see that we do give it a lot of significance. So we're very glad that we were able to do that and that so many people came forward in support of the bill tonight. So with that, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2647 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2084. Mr. Stembridge, would you like to tell us about this bill?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2084 authorizes the Secretary of State to set the election date for the United States presidential primary, not necessarily the third Tuesday in May. If you would like, I can provide some additional background on this. Let me know.
Yes, I think that would be helpful.
You have a summary sheet that describes the current situation as we know it for presidential primaries around the country. As you probably know, there are several states that are considering changing their primary dates. The best information that we have shows this schedule that's shown on your summary. January 14th, 2008 would be the Iowa caucus. January 19th, the Nevada caucus. The Nevada caucus is new, has not taken place at this time period in previous presidential election years. Then the New Hampshire primary, which is probably the best known one there, at the 22nd of January. And following that, a week later, South Carolina. This schedule has been approved by the Democratic National Committee, and the Republican Party has basically followed this, is my understanding. I don't know if the Republican National Committee has taken an official stand, such as the Democrats, but this is generally the way the Republicans are planning to do it as well, to the best of my knowledge. Beginning on February 5th, other primaries are allowed. Now, the power that the Democratic National Committee has is to reduce the number of delegates if a state were to decide to go before New Hampshire, let's say, with its primary. And that has what is bunching states up on February 5th, which is the first date that the Democratic National Committee has said go for it, basically. So that would be the earliest date that most states are considering if they're considering moving their primaries up. And you'll see the list for February 5th from a couple of weeks ago. Alabama, Arizona, Arkansas, New Mexico, New Jersey, North Carolina, and Utah. Illinois and California are also reportedly considering moving their presidential primaries to February 5th. Oregon's presidential primary is still in May.
Thank you for that background. This bill does come to us from the Secretary of State, Bill Bradbury. And I know that we have a representative from the Secretary of State's office. Would you like to come forward and give us your comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Please identify yourself.
Yes,
you know.
Madam Chairperson, members of the committee. My name is Elon Hassan. I'm the Legislative Policy Advisor for the Secretary of State's office. Briefly, the Secretary of State asked this bill to be filed. He is part of the National Associations of Secretary of State, and the intention here is to work on something called a rotating regional primary. And the rotating regional primary, you take four parts of you divide the country up into four parts. I think it's east, sort of southeast, midwest, and west. Each have an equal number of electoral votes, and every 4 years you would rotate which one goes first. So the intent of this bill is to set us up for that. Now, my understanding is that the Republican National Committee meets together as a body in 2008, and that would be the first time they would actually be able to change any of their primaries. The DNC has the ability to vote in some other manner, so I think that's why they're able to make some of those decisions. So the main goal of this from the Secretary's point of view is to set us up for 2012. And so, again, every 4 years you would have, say, the West Coast, everybody goes first on one primary day, then a month later the East, South, Midwest, and that would rotate to keep everybody in the loop. And, again, the problem being that by the time May rolls around here, the parties have more or less chosen who the candidate is based on the number of delegates, and Oregon is sort of underrepresented at that point in time. So the and this is a problem throughout the country. And the National Associations of Secretaries of State agree on this general idea, and that's what we were hoping to accomplish to set us up for 2012.
Thank you. Are there questions? Yes, Vice Chair Berger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Elon, explain again, if we enacted this, I'm looking at the date on the bottom of the bill somewhere, and I'm not finding it quick enough.
Yep.
This would go into effect not this next coming presidential year, but the following one, 2012. Is that?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chairperson, Representative Berger. It is the Secretary of State's, it is not his intention to move it for 2008. This would give him the flexibility to do so, but it would, the intention would be for 2012, so for future Secretaries of State.
Thank you.
So, Representative Thatcher, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Now, would this just be the presidential primary and all other state offices, like representatives, senators, that would be still on a different day.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson, Representative Thatcher. Yeah, this would be a separate election, which means it would also have an additional cost associated with it. We'd have to run separately. I believe that our primary is set in the Constitution. So if we wanted to move the entire primary, that would be a constitutional issue.
And Vice Chair Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jason, again, I'm still trying to figure out the, and maybe our administrator can help as well, but since there is no date in the bill that I can find out, would this not go into effect upon passage?
Thank you, Madam Chairperson, Representative Buckley. Yeah, it would go into effect. It's not the Secretary's intention to move it for 2008. The reason there's no date in the bill is because we would be moving it every 4 years. So, for example, if the West Coast was chosen first in 2012, perhaps we would do an election on February 5th. But then in 2016, maybe we'd go last and we'd be May 20th. So it would allow the Secretary to move the date as appropriate based on the rotating regional primary.
Thank you very much. I do note that in line 16, on page 1, it does say Secretary of State by rule may set presidential primary. So it would not require him to do so, but I just have a little confusion because it seems like it would allow him to do so for 2008. So just to try to clarify the bill.
That's correct. It would open up for 2008, and it's not his intention to do so.
So I have a question then. The committee administrator gave us some background about all these other states that already are taking action to move the date of their presidential primary, and I'm sure we have all heard comments from our constituents or from activists who are concerned that Oregon's being left behind. If we were to wish to work with you to make this effective in the next election, what would it take to do that?
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. I think the first thing it would take would be a better knowledge of how the RNC would do things, because it seems like the DNC has some flexibility there. But as far as we could, according to when I checked in with the Secretary about this, their meeting is until August when they meet as a convention. So I'm not sure how those delegates would work. And again, it would have a there would be a fiscal for the counties. Well, I believe for the counties on that, in that we have to mail the ballots. Usually this would cost about $1 million, $1.5 million to do.
And what would be the latest date by which you would need to make a decision if it were to be effective in 2008, if we were looking at a date such as February 5th?
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. I'm not positive. My guess it would be the standard date we would need to run an election, and I think it's about 76 days before the election we would need to know to get ballot pamphlet statements and have everything in order. Voters' pamphlets, rather, mail the ballots out, print them up.
Sometime in November, probably?
Yeah. Well, depending on when we want to hold it. I think it's generally about 60 days. I see Kathy Beck is here. She's the clerk for Jackson, and she might have a better answer than I do.
Okay. Other questions? Okay, thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
And next we will hear from Kathy Beckett. Please come forward. Good evening.
Good evening. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Kathy Beckett. I live at 1535 Stardust Way here in Medford. And I want to welcome you all here to Jackson County. It's great to see your faces. And I, too, appreciate the fact that you're here in Medford and I'm not having to drive to Salem. So I'm here tonight to speak on behalf of the Oregon County Clerks Association on this particular bill, on House Bill 2084. The County Clerks Association basically is in favor of this bill. But there were some things in the bill that I found were kind of lacking, and our representative from the Secretary of State's office has tried to clarify some of that this evening. The one thing that we find is rather troubling is that there isn't any funding mechanism to fund the cost of the election. No matter when it happens, there's nothing in the bill that talks about who's going to pay for it. And I'm here to say that to add an additional election is very, very expensive statewide, and we would like to see something stated in the bill that basically states that it will be covered by the state as far as the election costs are concerned. So that's really basically all my concern, of course, and I was looking for a sunset clause in the bill and couldn't find one, and it's been explained to me why that occurred with our gentleman from the state testimony.
Did you have any comments about when, since you're generally supportive of this, when would be
A political issue, and I really don't think the Clerks Association wants to touch that one with a 10-foot pole. We want to stay very neutral on that, Madam Chair.
Okay. Are there questions for this witness?
Just a comment?
Yes. Vice Chair Berger.
Hi, Kathy.
Hi.
I'm happy to be here. We visited in Salem when she was up for the clerks, and so I'm just saying hello.
Thank you.
Great.
Nice.
Yes, Vice Chair Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Kathy, with the addition of an election, would it put a strain on county clerks in the state of Oregon to have, if it, say, for instance, it was a February 5th election, given the flow of your work throughout the year, how would that impact your office?
Madam Chair, Representative Buckley, actually, February would probably not be as critical a date as say, May and March might be, because you've got more time.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your testimony.
We're glad
that you could be with us this evening. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on House Bill 2084? And any further comments or discussion from committee members? Yes, Mr. Stembridge.
Madam Chair, I believe that if you wanted to have this effective for the 2008 election cycle, you would probably need to put an emergency clause on to make it effective upon passage or effective 90 days following adjournment sine die. That would give the Secretary of State's office and the clerks the time to plan what they've done. We had a similar special election measure for which a fiscal analysis was done in 2003. That was the last time we can determine. And that came out at $1.3 million. The cost of reimbursing county clerks, you can imagine it might be $1.5 million now if they did put an inflation adjustment on that figure. The other main component of funding for a special election has to do with the voter's pamphlet. You may recall that people pay $500 to have a page in there. That does not cover the cost of printing the voter's pamphlet. So that's an additional cost that's ordinarily been funded out of the general fund to do that sort of thing. I would also mention there is a state statute that limits the it's called state policy governing election dates, and if you want to go forward with this, we would probably need to look at those statutes as well and put in some sort of notwithstanding clause to give clear freedom to the Secretary of State to set the date.
And I note that this bill obviously would need to have a fiscal impact statement. I assume, given some of the testimony we've heard, that it likely would need also a subsequent referral to Ways and Means to deal with the funding issues if we were to try to make it effective.
It's likely. It does say May, so it might be that the Secretary of State would need to come back to the emergency board or to the some other legislative forum to try to obtain that money.
Vice Chair Berger?
Yes. Madam Chair, I just wanted to ask Mr. Stembridge, so I'm clear in my mind, you said in the 2003 special election, which was what?
That was not a special election. It was a fiscal impact statement done for a measure that did not go through the legislature, but it was enacted. The fiscal impact was done for one of the chambers, and then the measure did not pass in the other chambers. So we did not have the special election for that.
But at one point,
that was the point at which the estimate was brought in at $1.3 million.
So if I could, Madam Chair, the vision here is that if we were to enact this, then the Secretary of State would have the power to say, all right, it's the West's turn, so we're going to go in February this time. And then the state would pay for that election and reimburse the counties. Is that the vision for this?
That would be one vision.
Oh, there could be other visions where Ms. Beckett might not be so happy. I got it.
Okay, Vice Chair Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to note that in the media there was a report that Senator John McCain on David Letterman last night indicated that he was going to make a run for the presidency. And since we're live here on Rogue Valley Television, I'm just wondering if Representative Roblin has anything he might want to announce.
Or anyone else.
You mean starting your exploratory committee?
Okay. Well,
Madam Chair.
Any other comments on this bill? Yes, Representative Esquivel.
I think our county clerk brought up a great point here, because we don't want to get in an unfunded mandate.
That's
and that's exactly what we're leading into here unless we correct this. So thank you, Kathy. I appreciate it.
Okay. I think that completes the testimony, and I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2084. And, colleagues, are there any comments, further comments, closing remarks?
Just thank you, Madam
Berger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's very nice to be here. This is a very nice venue. We feel very honored to be up here so high and feeling very important, and appreciate the hospitality of Southern Oregon.
Great. Representative Roblin.
It was a wonderful drive down. It was nice of you to clean the freeways. we were hearing all the stuff in Salem. People were very nervous about coming this way, but it actually was a very, very nice drive, so thanks for that, too.
Vice Chair Buckley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks to our staff for coming down and setting this up and making it all work, and thanks to RVTV as well for putting this online.
Great. Representative Esquivel.
I just want to thank Southern Oregon for his hospitality. As normal, we have great hospitality down here in Southern Oregon, and it's nice to be home and get a good welcome.
Representative Thatcher.
Once again, thank you. Thank you, Southern Oregon, Jackson County, Medford. We appreciate you.
And I certainly join my colleagues in saying that it was a delight to be able to hold the hearing here, and we certainly value all the testimony that we've heard, as well as the participation from members of the community. So we hope that it's been a good experience for everyone. We say hello to our friends out in the community watching on television as well. And with that, I will close this March 1st meeting of the House Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules. And colleagues, we are adjourned.
Thank you, Madam Chair.